Good morning, everyone. If you look at this room, this kind of feels like what it is to travel all the way from Redmond to here, sitting on an airplane for 15 hours. There's quite some seats left in the front here. I already asked to look at the agenda. Maybe we can do a repeat of the session or something. I mean, my schedule is pretty much open, so they will, I guess, look at that as well. And they're bringing in more seats, so let's get started. Nothing is more fun than having a packed room on a, I don't know where my body clock is right now, but it's great to be back in Gold Coast. I was here, I think about 2 years ago. My name is Dandy, Technical Product Manager on SQL Server. Contact information is up there. I typically tend to respond to direct messages on Twitter as well. So feel free to tweet about the session, things you see. If you get excited about any of the features, let me know. I mean, shout it out, okay? The reason they put me in a morning session is to wake you guys up and create that energy level and bring that up a bit. So we're putting this session first because I wanted to give you an overview of SQL Server 2014, what is coming, what is in it for you. And then later in the week, you're going to see sessions presented by some of our MVPs. I think Victor Isakov is doing a session drilling much more down into the in-memory components. We have sessions that focus much more on the cloud aspect as well. So there's an entire set and a nice variety of session content that you're going to see throughout the rest of the week. Okay. So with that, I should be able to click this thing. There's an on button. Okay. See, that's what travel does. 20 years of TechEd Australia. I think you kind of saw it in the keynote yesterday. We went through a lot with SQL Server as well. When we initially came out with some of the features in SQL Server, we started focusing and building on top of SQL Server for quite a bit. We had what we called a modern database platform on SQL 2000 because at that time it was a modern database platform. It was serving all the needs of the customers, and we continued to enhance that into bringing in additional mission-critical features where we introduced database mirroring into SQL Server 2005. We brought in features like compression, policy-based management within SQL Server 2008. Then we started focusing on the performance and the productivity and the self-service BI components. So we did Power Pivot in SQL 2008 R2, Master Data Services, integration within SharePoint when it comes to reporting capabilities and so on. And we really continue to build on top of that. Okay? Database mirroring evolved into what we call always on. And with SQL Server 2012, we introduced a feature that is called column store indexing. And I'm very well aware that a lot of people in the room are probably still on 2008, 2008 R2, thinking about 2012, starting to look at SQL Server 2014. How many of you actually downloaded the preview of SQL Server 2014 already? Okay, that's about 10%. That'll be your action item as soon as you get out of the session anyways. You're going to be excited about some of the features there. Okay? So within SQL Server 2014, we then continued to enhance that mission-critical platform, but we also brought in a lot of cloud capabilities because that's a demand we see coming in from customers. We want to be able to leverage those features. We want to be able to have those on-premises, but we also want to have those within the cloud. Okay? That's exactly what we're going to look at. All those features and what does it bring within SQL Server 2014 and the database platform. The way we designed SQL Server 2014 is around what we call three pillars. One of them is mission critical performance. We talk about faster insights on any kind of data. When we talk about any kind of data, we talk about being able to leverage data that does not necessarily sit within SQL Server and might be sitting into a NoSQL environment, might be running on Hadoop, might be running on any kind of database. And then, of course, how can we bring this platform to the cloud and really support what we call a platform for hybrid cloud solutions? Okay. So what does that mean? Mission critical, we evolved SQL Server 2014 into a product that is having in-memory components built in directly within the product. Okay? I guess most of you in the room here and the folks standing in the back there, I think you know pretty much that that SQL Server has some capabilities, and you're familiar with those capabilities, and you know how to use those in your day-to-day jobs, right? Wouldn't it be weird if all of a sudden we would take a total switch and say, everything you know on SQL Server now, forget about that because it's all going to be different? No. I mean, I started with DBase 3 a long, long time ago, and being able to build an index, actually my day-to-day job continues to evolve on that. Okay, I have new features available. So when we talk about things like in-memory, we want to be able to bring you those components within the product, being able to build upon the strengths you already have as a database developer, build on top of the strengths that you already have as a DBA as well. Okay, and that's a key differentiator comparing us to any of the other in-memory sellers when we think about in-memory OLTP. And of course, we made enhancements onto high availability, onto the security platform, and so on. So if you look at the in-memory component, there's a couple of aspects to it. Okay, we wanted to be able to leverage the full capabilities of SQL Server that you're already used to, the security model, the way you create a table, the way you define a file group, and so on. And we want to be able to bring it in such a way that we now continue to build that across any workload. Okay? When we talk about data warehousing, we want to have optimization pure for data warehousing. And we want to have optimization for OLTP as well. I think it was about 2 years ago at PaaS Summit that we talked for the first time about in-memory and SQL Server, in-memory OLTP, and we called that Hackathon. Okay, the design principles of Hackathon is the design principle of SQL Server. Bring that in memory built in. If you look at some of our customers, early adopters, Bwin is an online gambling company. I'm staying at a casino, so I couldn't find a better example. They went from 15,000 transaction requests per second to 250,000 on the same hardware. Okay. Just by leveraging the in-memory component in SQL Server 2014. So what is it? If you look at the features and the enhancements that we do within SQL Server 2014 for in-memory, we have the new in-memory OLTP that we codenamed Hackathon. But we also went further into enhancing column store indexing, okay, which is memory optimized, and bring that into what we call a pure column store. And of course, we continue to build on the in-memory components with SQL Server that we already had in Power Pivot. But we also have some nice features like buffer pool extension that allows you to really extend your buffer onto SSD. Okay? So you're no longer restricted within the buffer cache within SQL and optimize the query processing around that. So we're bringing that on a couple of platforms. So we have the analytics aspects where we have that sitting within SQL Server 2014, 2012, using the same components as we have it in Excel 2013, being able to build a Power Pivot model and then bring that Power Pivot model over into analysis services, column store indexing, we made some enhances as well. But let's have a look on what is in there for you and how that works. So I'm going to switch over to my demo machine and have a little walkthrough on that. Okay? Hey, I said everything is the same, right? SQL Management Studio. So if I look at my SQL Management Studio, nothing much has changed. I'm going to be able to just use the same features and the capabilities that what I was used to. Okay? So what have we done? Let's first talk about that in-memory component and how we work. Okay? I'm going to use a database script. And by the way, I will actually share all the scripts on my blog. So when you download the preview of SQL Server 2014, you can do exactly what I'm doing in a session. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my in-memory OLTP. I have a couple of scripts. Okay? I'm going to set some database options here. And I'm going to be creating a database. Okay? That's my first step. Nothing really much there. We'll just execute this. This created the database. I have my database. It's still executing. Okay, let's hope this executes successfully. And we should be ready to go, right? That's my database there. Now I should start praying to the demigods as well. Okay, that's not good. Let me do a quick refresh on this. This is just not what you expect when you ran through it like a minute ago. Okay, let's just leave that for a second and see what we got here. Okay, hold on a second here. Okay, let's do a quick fix. Okay. I'll get there. I get this going pretty fast. Shouldn't be too much of an issue. Okay, I'm sorry about that. So what's going to happen? As soon as I create a database, I'm going to be creating a file group, and everyone knows how to add a file group to a database, right? But I think that's a pretty fair, straightforward process there. So as I spin up my file group, the moment a file group is created, the process is actually fairly simple, okay? You're going to leverage technologies that you already have. And here's the key differentiator. If you look at any other in-memory database vendor, what you'll see is that they offer you a database in memory. Okay? But the entire database sits in memory. Now, SQL Server uses the concepts of working with file groups. So what does that mean to you if you're able to work with a file group? You can decide which tables you're going to be putting on that file group. Okay? So we can really bring that optimization on the table level and optimize just for that. Okay? So let's get that going. I'm going to switch over just in a second. I just don't want to go through the embarrassment of having a demo fail again. Let me just quickly execute that here. And open that up. And I'll be there in a second. That happens if you steal the latest bits from the network before you go to an event. Okay, so I take full responsibility on that. And we're getting there. So let me switch over and walk you through this. Okay. So what happens is the following, okay? So I'm literally going to create a new database, okay? And what I'm able to do on that new database, I'm actually able to add what we call a in-memory file group. Okay, so it's a file group that is optimized for in-memory. Now the key strength of this is we get rid of all the locking and the latching that you traditionally have within a database. Okay? So we went further than just saying, hey, we're going to pin this table in memory or whatsoever. We're actually going to take that and optimize that as part of a memory-optimized file group. And then we still have the capability to write data persisted because, of course, what do you want to do when the memory or the server goes down? You want to be able to recover from that data. Okay? So it's writing back to a memory-optimized file group. So my database is created. My next step would actually be to open that other script here and show you on how I'm going to add in memory to that database. Okay, so what I'm actually doing here is the following, and I'm actually going to run that from a demo app. Okay, you're going to alter your database, add a file group to it, and then the keyword you're going to put in there is actually fairly simple: contains memory optimized data. Okay, next step is you're going to point out to where that file group is going to reside. So that's the persistent logging that's going to happen. So you're going to specify, okay, now I'm actually going to add that file group to it. Okay, and of course I separated my data files from my log files because I want to follow and bring some best practices. Okay, and then when it comes to the table creation, with a table creation in memory, you're then going to specify the option and set on that table, well, this is a memory optimized table. So you're going to specify there, hey, with memory optimized equals on. okay, and specify the indexing that it's going to take as part of that. Victor is having a session on that later this week, but it's going to actually drill down into all of those components. I just want to show you the performance benefits that we get with this. So let's take a simple example, and I do have a sample app here that I'm going to show you, okay? So sample app is this one. It's an airline ticket reservation driver, okay? One of our customers, an airline, what they basically have is they do their sales almost on one day. They announced beginning of January, we do a special deal, low airfare, and they got a lot of requests and a lot of bookings in almost instantly on all the vacation travel that they have, okay? If you look on their traditional system, their baseline, okay, they get a certain amount of transactions per second, okay? I'm running this all local to put things into perspective, okay? So they got some baseline. And if I look on that, the CPU usage within that process is about 61%, and I have latching because I need to latch onto that record. I need to be able to do the inserts, the updates, and so on, right? Okay? Now what happens is when I migrate that table, and the way to migrate that table is by moving that table over to that memory optimized file group, which is a script that I showed you. Once that table is migrated, that table is now in memory, which means not only am I going to optimize for more CPU usage, I'm also going to optimize and get rid of all locking and latching that does occur there. Okay? So what happens there is I'm going to start some transactions. Okay? Did I migrate? No. So looking at this, what's going on here? My transaction tracking is actually going to go up significantly. I'm going to get something close to 5 to 10 times faster just by moving that table to memory. Okay. What else I can do is I can optimize that table and say, rather than doing the table migration, I can also compile and optimize that stored procedure and migrate the stored procedure. So actually what you do there is we have a natively compiled stored procedure that will then run that optimized. So what I get there with a compiled stored procedure, you see that my transactions per second are going up significantly, okay? Rather than being able to address 2,200, I'm now addressing 26,000, 23,000 transactions per second. Running on exactly the same hardware, right? Now, what's the cool thing about this? You are going to be the one that decides which tables you want to put into memory. How many of you are familiar with our management data warehouse that we have in SQL Server, where you can look into your reporting and so on? So what we're doing for in-memory OLTP, we're actually going to identify for you which tables could take advantage from that memory optimization, okay? Once that's done, you can then say, okay, I'm going to migrate these tables and move these tables over. Now, there's a couple of levels that you could really work through this and a couple of capabilities that you have there. I'm going to switch back to the presentation real quick here, okay? So, first of all, in memory, it's integrated within SQL Server. It's full support of ACID properties. The indexes that you're going to be using and creating on that table are actually memory optimized as well. So you don't have any B-trees, you don't have any buffer pools. You have non-blocking commands, and the T-SQL code will actually be translated into native code. Okay, so that's where you get the advantage and the key benefit from. Okay, we'll see that in some of the test results, we get 10 times faster performance without changing any of the hardware. If we look on scalability, if we look at some of our customers, they get 50 times to 100 times faster on some of the transactional processing that they have going on there. Okay. I wish I could put on Twitter now how to struggle through your first demo with a full room. But hey, we did it, okay? So the core designs and the reason why we did this is because we see a steadily declining price in memory, okay? Memory has become relatively cheap. At one of the events, I actually just pulled 32 gigs out of my pocket and I said, I want this demo machine to go faster. Okay. That's the cost of memory nowadays, right? You have many cores that are sitting per CPU, so you have quite some capabilities, okay? If you look at the performance data operations, the scale-up, the concurrency, how efficient it is to translate, well, your T-SQL code, you have to make some modifications to that, of course, but then you can optimize that and make that and compile into the machine code and actually take advantage from a better integration. Now, where are we different and what are we doing differently? If you look on the key differences with some of our competitors, we actually have full interop. You can write a join between a table that sits in memory and a table that does not sit in memory. Okay? Again, using the same syntax as you've done it in the past. Okay? Any questions on that? Okay? Brave guy taking questions for the full room. Go ahead. Great question. So yes, of course, you can monitor what's going to be, you're basically working on the file group level, so you know exactly what's going to be sitting on what file group, and that file group is identified as a memory optimized. Also on the table properties, you can actually identify which tables are memory optimized. Okay? Okay, that's the first part. In-memory OLTP architecture, okay? We're right there, and I'm sorry we kind of struggled through that. Let's have a look at one of the other features that we have. Okay. Column store indexing. Okay. You probably have seen this. It's a report server, and it takes a while to load, right? And then you run the report, and someone's going to come to you and say, well, the report processing is slow. How can I make it faster? So you look, you start doing some optimizations on the store procedures, and eventually the report runs faster, okay? And eventually you get your data returned, right? Now what I have here is a table in my demo set here that is called Fact Online Sales Table. If I look at the table properties of this, okay, and I look at the storage, I have a table that is about 500 megs, and it's having a little over 12 million records. Okay, nothing special, I'm running this on my laptop. Okay, if I query the table and I start writing a join, of course, looking at my index that I have on the table, if I look in the indexes that I have in place, hey, I only have a clustered index on that table. Okay, so how can I optimize for that? Well, in SQL Server 2012, we introduced a feature that is called non-clustered column store indexing. How many of you have played with that? Okay. What's the drawback of a non-clustered column store index? It's not updatable. Ouch! Well, I would argue it is. Okay, everything's possible with SQL Server. This is one of the statements I once made. And I would argue it is because you have some workaround scenarios where you can actually do partition switching. Okay, and then modify your switching your partitions, recreate the index. So you have some capabilities, but it's not updatable. Okay, that's why it's targeted towards data warehousing, which are primarily, in a lot of cases, just read instructions that are sitting on top of your data warehouse. Now, what happens is, if I right-click, let's see if that report is actually up there. Okay, so I'm gonna run a sales summary report. Reporting services, you've seen this, it's going to take a while to run the report. I'm not going to wait for it because I don't know what my performance is like, right? Initially with 5 million records, yeah, that would result in return in like 30 seconds. Okay. Now with 12 million records, that's a little bit different. Okay, it's going to take longer. Have you seen this before? I guess yes, right? Okay. So what's going to happen is the following. In SQL Server 2012, I can go onto that table and say, hey, I want to create a new index. And that new index is a non-clustered column store index. Okay, let's do that. That's fun. Okay, create a non-clustered column store index. Okay, what I'm going to do with that is I'm going to look at the columns that I want to add. And I'm going to add all columns because I know nothing about SQL Server, so I'm just going to click OK, OK, and next, right? Okay. My index is created. What happens at that point is I actually go through the row structure of my table, grab every column, pivot that, and create columnar indexes. Okay. If I were to ask who's using Excel here in this room, I think I would see all hands going up. Right? It doesn't make sense from a data warehousing perspective, because what happens is you're going to do your aggregations on the columns. Because of the fact that you switch over to a columnar model, automatically you're going to have higher levels of compression because you have the same kind of data. Okay? So when we look at that, and I go to that column store index here, the non-clustered column store index, of course, will take storage as well. My table is 500 megs. How much is my index going to take? 500? No, because I have better compression, right? So if I look on the storage there, you'll see that my table, okay? If I actually look at the table storage here, okay? I had 500 megs now, and now I have 674. Why? Because it's a non-clustered index, it takes storage. Okay? So what we did is, with SQL Server 2014, we turned that into what we call updatable column store, okay? Not only updatable, but also clustered column store indexing, okay? Now I'm gonna go back to that report, okay? This report, initially, without that cluster, a non-clustered column store index, took 65 seconds. How long you gonna, how long you think the report is gonna take with that index? I hear some numbers. 5 seconds? Let's see. Okay. 0.1 seconds. Okay. Ooh. Now, the problem is I've just put my table into a non-updatable mode. Okay. And a gentleman that was using column store indexes said, well, that's a disadvantage. I don't want that. I want it to be updatable. Okay. I go like, well, I'd like to have better compression. So what if I could take this table and natively store that table into a clustered columnar mode? Okay? So what I can do is the following. And again, same concept, okay? My non-clustered index statement will look like this. If I wanted to create a clustered, what I can do is I can go onto that table and say new index, I want to create a clustered column store index. Okay. What I already did is I actually created a table that already have that index to show you the difference in storage. Okay. The performance is going to be the same, but the difference in storage is going to be significant. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to rename my clustered column store table. Okay. And then rename that into effects online table. So what I'm going to get here is if I refresh my tables, okay, that fact online sales table that I had that was 670 meg with a non-clustered index is now from a storage perspective, there we go, 207. Okay, that's the key advantage not only of updatable column store, but that's the key advantage of being able to forget about your index and store clusters in a columnar way. Okay? That's pretty cool. My performance, I'm going to get exactly the same. Well, actually, I'm going to get better performance because I'm going to be hitting that index most of the time for the operation that I ran the report with. Okay? On my laptop, if I now refresh that report, my initial report might take just a bit longer. Okay? 0.36 seconds, okay? But that's because of the hardware that I'm running it on. Okay? But this is acceptable performance, right? Okay.
Is that only compressing the clustered index, or is it doing the whole table?
It's doing the whole table. So the table, there's no separate index pages anymore. It is actually the way the data is stored, it's stored columnar, okay? I could point you to a more detailed session that we did at Tech in North America, where we really drill down into how it's structured, what happens to the updates, with delta tables, and so on. But that's a key concept. Okay. What else have we done? We introduced another performance feature, which is what we call SSD buffer pool extension. Okay. Well, if you want to hit cache, of course, you're only going to hit cache based on the amount of memory that you have dedicated to SQL Server. So what we've done is the following. Okay? And as I said, I'm going to show you that straight from my demo folder because I'm going to share those demos with you so you could play with that. Okay? If you look at the SSD buffer pool extension, okay, everybody knows how to write an alter server statement, right? So once I do my alter server statement, okay, alter server configuration, set buffer pool extension, I'm going to locate a file as my buffer pool extension. Of course, you want that file to be running on SSD, you want to be running that onto flash, okay, to take advantage of that. Now what happens is, if I specify that buffer pool configuration, okay, I can actually see whether buffer pool extension is available, so I have dynamic management views for that, okay. I can monitor and see if any data or index pages are in my buffer pool, okay. Now that's really hard to show on a device like this or on hardware like this. Okay. You're only going to see that when you work with larger data sets and you have a huge amount of queries that will come in, where some of it is going to be sitting into your normal buffer pool as part of SQL Server, the other thing is going to be sitting into your buffer pool extension. Okay. Flash SSDs become more and more cheaper. Just can you imagine what you can do to create that intermediate level? You're really talking about the hot-cold data scenario, where you're going to be hitting a second level of caching that you didn't have in the past, okay? So I can actually see that. I can identify that. What you're basically going to see is same thing the way you work with SQL Server, is what's the amount of free space, which pages are located in memory, which bases are located into buffer pool extension, okay? Now the cool thing about this is you can actually enable and disable that at random. So let's say you have a business process that runs once a month or whatever that you want to have take advantage of buffer pool extension, you can actually do so using that alter server configuration and just turn that off as well. Okay, back to the presentation to make sure we have everything covered on that part. Okay, so we talked about in-memory OLTP, we talked about column store, okay. Key changes is it's updatable. It's you still can do a non-clustered, okay? You could still do a non-clustered column store index and have the same features as you have with SQL Server 2012, but you can now take advantage of that columnar clustered store that you have there. Just for the purposes, if you later on go to the presentation, I have a reference table that shows like what's the storage of a table that does not have an index and what's the storage of a table that has column store or clustered column store, and what about compression enabled on those tables or not if I use standard table compressions within SQL Server. Now let's head over to security, okay? For the record, SQL Server has been the least vulnerable database for 5 years in a row, okay? Yeah, if we hear some of our competitors, they would say, sure, right. But what about the operating system, right? We made some changes and improvements that allows you to run SQL Server on Windows Server Core, which means significant less amount of footprint onto the patching service, onto the security service that you have with that, okay? So really, some great assets that you could take advantage on running SQL Server on Windows Server Core. I'm actually running a hands-on lab on that, instructor-led lab later on this week, okay? One of the other things that we did is we enhanced the separation of duty. How many of you are DBAs? Okay. Well, and how many of you DBAs wish that you would not have access to the data that you need to maintain? Okay. I don't know what's in your data, but I'm curious, so I'm wondering, right? I mean, it does make sense that you have DBAs that could take their backup jobs, optimize the database engine, but do not necessarily have access to the data, okay? So what we did within SQL Server 2012 is we created a new set of security, connect to any database, impersonate any login, select all user securables, okay? Quite a lot of features, but you can now have DBAs that can administer a database, but they cannot see or connect to the user data, okay? Which is cool. They can update the indexes, they can defrag the database and so on, but they cannot see what that data is. Okay. Talk about scalability. I know a lot of you and a lot of our customers are actually using resource governors. What we did on SQL Server 2012 was, we brought some improvements on that, but what we're doing in 2014 is we're going even further. Biggest request on resource management on a server is what? Disk I/O. Wouldn't it be nice if we'd be able to control Disk I/O and say, this process gets a limited amount of resources, and we had that on the CPU level, we had that on the memory level, but what we did not have it on is the I/O level. Okay? So resource governor in SQL Server 2012, 2014, allows you to manage I/O and put resource pool and assign I/O. If you ever go to any of the Microsoft certifications for SQL Server 2012, that's one of the tricky ones. Okay, because a lot of people assume it does I/O, it only does I/O in SQL Server 2014. Now, there's a really good better together story here as well. What if I run SQL Server on Windows Server 2012 R2? What are the key advantages that I get there? Okay? I can take advantage of storage spaces. If I run that into a virtual environment, I could do online VHDX file resize. I can take advantage of quality of service on network and storage, but what else I can do is I can use nick teaming and team network adapters together to really increase the level of throughput there. If you look on the scalability there, a virtual machine could have 64 virtual CPUs, 1 terabyte of memory, okay? So that's all running on Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V. You can really expand and extend that out. And if you then were to run that on Windows Server Core, you're going to be taking even more advantages. So we talked about SSD buffer pool extension, okay? Quite some benefits there. Some of the other things we did was a request that a lot of our MVPs have been asking for, and a lot of our customers asked for as well, is if I do an online index operation in SQL Server 2012, that online index operation, if I have a partition table, it still locks the entire table. Okay? It takes the entire, it does not work at the partition level. So we made changes to that when we're actually doing that as part of the partition level. You can also set lock priority for table switch and online indexing operations as well to have some advantages right there. Now, we'll get to the second pillar, which is the providing faster insights to any kind of data, okay? How many BI folks in the room? Okay. Oh, quite a few. So let's have a look at the capabilities that we have there and the investments that we're doing on each of those as well, okay? There's quite some things that you're gonna be excited about, okay? When it comes to data visualization, data discovery, what we actually released is what we call Microsoft Power BI for Office 365, which is an online capability that allows you to integrate within Excel 2013, taking advantage of the capabilities you're already used to within SQL Server using the Power Pivot model and so on. And you can really start discovering data that you were typically in the past likely have not been exposed to, okay? I'm pretty sure that as a DBA or a BI person, what you typically do the most is combining data sets together from different data sources. Correct? Fair assessment, right? I have data sitting in Oracle, some of them might be sitting in the cloud. It would be nice if I can pull in some government data and so on. It would really be nice if I could start combining data sets together. I was in Sydney last weekend, and I had a discussion with one of our MVPs there, and he says, hey, Dandy, where are you from again? You're from Ireland, right? No, I'm not. So I'm from Belgium. Oh, Belgium. Oh, yeah, you guys have some good beer there. Okay? But us Australians were much better beer drinkers. I go like, really? Huh. Let's have a look at that. Let's have a look at that. Okay. So Power Query or Data Explorer allows me to look at multiple data sets and do data discovery. Okay. Now, I've got a lot of sample databases, but I'm not necessarily traveling around with a database that shows me the alcohol consumption in Australia, right? So what I can do is I can look at my data sources and go like, hey, look at this. I could go and get data from SQL Server, from Windows Azure SQL Database, Oracle, DB2, MySQL, PostgreSQL, and thus also Redshift, Teradata. I have lots of data sources that I can get access to. Okay, I could go from a file, from a group of folders. Think about log files that come from smart meters and so on. You could actually pull that in using Power Query. Okay, I could actually go to a website and say, hey, this URL that contains this data, I want to put that in as well by just say from web. And that's going to prompt me for a web page. Or I can do an online search. Okay. I want to find something like beer consumption per capita. Okay, now let's do a search on that. See what I can find. Okay, oh, look at that. It pulls me up a data set that I don't have sitting in my database, but I'm accessing publicly. Okay, so what we do with Power Query, we're actually scanning the Wikipedia pages and libraries, and we're pulling and exposing that data for you to use in combination with any other data set. Okay, list of countries by beer consumptions. And I go at that and go like, oh, wow. Consumption per capita in liters. Australia seems to be consuming quite some beer there. Right. But wait a minute, okay? We got some really strong beers in Belgium, okay? What about pure alcohol consumption among adults, okay, higher than 15 in liters per capita? Because you can call anything a beer, right? But let's talk like pure alcohol. Yeah? So I'm going to be pulling in that data set, okay? And I can see which country... There's some kind of interesting data in this table. There's the total amount, there's the beer, the wine, the spirits, the others. Quite honestly, I don't know what that answer would be. How could you drink something else that contains alcohol? I guess aftershave or something like that. But the cool thing about this is I can start filtering and shaping that data. Now, I pulled in that data set, so what I can do here is I can say, hey, you know what? Okay, this is kind of nice. This is pure. I could start using this right away. I don't need to make any transformations. But if I want to, I can do things like transform my data, lowercase, uppercase. If I retrieve that from HD Insight or a Hadoop, I can actually say, hey, I want to transform this input file into a JSON document and then expose that data set. Now, the cool thing about Power Query is the capability to merge and combine data sets. Ha! Wait a minute. I can merge and combine data sets? Okay. So what I can do is I can go back to Power Query and say, thanks for the kudos there. Let me just fix that real quick here. And say, what about tea consumption per capita? Okay. And then see, like, hey, let me see the list of countries with tea consumption per capita. Okay. Because in my opinion, a lot of beers in certain countries are kind of similar to drinking tea. If you're from Belgium or Australia, right? So the good thing is, I now have two tables. Okay, one of them is having country information, one of them is having tea, but I don't like that tea thing because I can't really do anything with it. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go filter and shape this one and say that tea consumption, you know what? I want to split that column up by delimiter. Okay? And say that my delimiter is a custom one and it lists it in kilograms, so I can say, like, split that up at the K. Okay? What I get now is I get my T consumption here. I can now say, you know what, transform this, change this type, or it is a number. It's identified that as a number. So what I can do now is I can now say this column here, okay? I can rename that column and say this is T consumption, okay? So what I'm going to do next is I can now say, well, I don't need this column anymore, and I don't need that column. Okay, and this is the data that I want to work with. Now, what am I going to do with that data? I want to be able to share that data out to my audience, right? I want everyone to be able to use that data. So what I can do is I can take that query, okay, and actually share that within my organization. So when people do a search and go here into that Power Query and they do a search, I can search for things that reside within my organization. Okay? And say, for example, I want to do a search on food. Okay? Oh, nothing shares within my organization. Okay? Looks like nobody actually published this. Why? Because what I'm actually using here is my own Office 365 tenant. Okay? So I could publish that as part of my Power BI capabilities there. Now let's combine these data sets together, okay? What I can do, I'm gonna go to Power Query and say, I want to merge these data sets together. But what I wanna know is, well, not who's the highest consumer of alcohol. I wanna figure out who drinks the most in general, whether that's tea, whether that's coffee, whatever, or what would be a good target, right? I could bring in the coffee data set and so on. So I could say this table on country, together with this table and country, I want to match these, and this is publicly available data, so anyone can get to that, okay? And what I will get is I will get a merged data set, okay? And what I'm going to take from that is I want the tea consumption, okay? So I've got the beer, the wine, the spirits, the other. I don't need that key anymore. So we'll remove this column. What we'll do with that one is we change the name on this one, and we call this tea. Okay. And if you want to bring in coffee whatsoever, that is absolutely fine. Okay. Now what else I can do is I can take this query and load that to data model. So at that point, that entire query result is going to load to my Power Pivot data model, and I can then do DAX expressions on it, combine those data sets together, and start building some really nice visualization across my data. Right? This is cool. Let's have a look at one of those. Okay? I have what we call here alcohol consumption, different populations. So what I did is I used that data set and I represented that into a PowerView workbook that sits directly in Excel 2013. What I can do is I can take that workbook and upload that into Office 365 Power BI so other people can get access to it using my Power BI site. Okay? And then they could browse that report on any device. Okay? That's the design concept, being able to bring that mobile experience onto any device. Now, how many of you were in the keynote yesterday? Yesterday's keynote, we had a glimpse of Power Map, which is a 3D visualization that we have, also part of that Power BI experience. And keep in mind that from an authoring perspective, you could download Power Query and you could download Power Map right now and start to play with that, okay? So what I do is I have some population data, I have some alcohol reports and data sets, okay? What I want to do is I want to insert a power map.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to launch power map. Okay. Ta-da! And I get the globe, and I get these little dots there that is automatically detecting based on my data model that says, hey, this thing that you named country, that is a country. Okay. So what I can do now is I can say, well, I have that country mapped. Thank you. What I want to see on that country is, for example, I want to see the, let's see what I have here. I want to see the population, okay? But I want to be able to represent that not as a column. I want to be able to represent that as a regional map, okay? A really cool thing to do if you want to play around with this and those regional maps, I can just map the labels to this, okay? I could change my themes and so on. So you can change coloring and so on. You have quite some capabilities, okay? So I'm showing the population, nothing much. I didn't map my beer data or whatever to it. What I can do now is I can layer data sets on top of this. So what I can do is the following. I could say like, hey, I want to add a new layer to this, okay? What I want to do is I want to map on that same country, I want to map the beer consumption for each of those countries. And I don't want to map that into, let's see, the liters of beer, but also the spirits consumption for each of those countries, okay? And I want to be able to show that into a stacked table. And I can really find and go through that data. I can actually use all my touch functionality, okay? Or you could go sit down on the floor and use a mouse on a giant monitor. But you have some capabilities there, right? Now, the cool thing is I can actually add multiple scenes to this, overlay this with data sets that might be interesting to find. Like, for example, and we have that available in our public example, like, for example, what's the impact on weather and flight delays? Okay, and pull in weather information and weather data from that. Now, the cool thing about this is kind of like working with Movie Maker or something. So what I can do is I can add additional scenes to this, add additional layers, overlay additional kind of data, okay? Pull in Twitter data, transfer that Twitter data into a JSON document and then map that out using the geotagging that we have on our tweets nowadays. Okay? Some really cool things you could do by leveraging these capabilities. And what else I can do is I can then create a video. And if I create that video, the only thing I have to do is grab my mouse and click and play that video and talk about the visualizations I have with that. So these are some really cool visualization capabilities that we have there. Now, of course, we're not done yet, right? I want to be able to share my workbooks and bring that into an experience where people actually could start consuming this. Okay? Let's have a look at consumption. Since we're talking alcohol and beers and coffee anyways, right? So what I have here is my Power BI team preview site. What I'm showing you is our Microsoft employee preview site. So what we did is, to show some scale and capabilities there, we actually said, hey, what about rolling every Microsoft employee up into a single tenant on Office 365? Okay, so we can get some really good metrics and consumptions and so on. Okay, so what I can do here is I have a report here that I'm going to open in my browser, okay? And I can literally grab that and display that on any device. So my Excel web app is gonna go and fetch that. I hope I didn't time out on the login, but what's gonna happen, it's gonna grab that workbook and bring me that workbook as an Excel app, okay? Now what I get here is quite nice. Look at the right-hand corner. Do you see something that is part of our Power BI capabilities that you're absolutely going to like? Because what I can do is I can grab that workbook, and this workbook will automatically render for the browser that I'm using. So if you're using a non-IE browser, it won't render this way. I mean, I could do filtering and so on, right? I mean, actually using my workbook, I can actually edit the workbook, make some changes to it, okay? I have a report here that's showing me sales over time. This is actually one of our data samples as well. It's a restaurant bar, and it talks about consumption, so I could find out what my best weekday is and so on. See if I can need to run any kind of promo or whatever. Look at what are the most popular mixed drinks that people consume. Okay, well, Washington Apple seems to be popular. Of course, you're in Seattle area if you work with these data. But there's some really interesting things like a Fruit Loop could be nice and interesting too. There's some drinks in there that if you're close by the beach might be more consumable than others. But look at this. I can preview that in HTML5. Uh-huh. What else we did is we released a native app. It's a mobile BI app, Power BI. Okay, and I can install that on any Windows 8 device. So if I have that Surface RT that I'm still considering whether I'm going to buy it at this event or not, okay, I can actually connect to that same Office 365 Power BI tenant and look at my reports. And I can favorite the reports and browse through them. Okay. Now, since I can literally render in any kind of browser, okay, what I'm able to do is do something like, let me show you that, okay. And I'm sorry, I failed to struggle to get one of my devices attached here on an HDMI cable, which I assume would be fairly simple if you have the dongle provided by that hardware provider. So let me show you, I'm going to switch over in just a second, okay, let me show you that. Since I couldn't project, what I brought is, and I knew that, I brought a webcam, okay? Now, I'm not going to touch this device with my bare hands because I've been told it's quite contagious. So what I can do is I can actually look at these same reports using my browser interface, okay? And you will see that my reports will just display, and I can browse and navigate through them. Okay, can I drop this now? You have no idea how the flight attendant responded to me when I asked if I could have one of her gloves. Okay, now let's go back to the presentation and show you some of the other things that I wanted to show you. Okay, so I talked about Power Query, it rolls into the Power Pivot, I showed you some of the Power View and the Power Map capabilities, and I showed you that Power BI site integration. Okay, actually I have a Surface RT up here as well if you want to see that Power BI app, and after the session you want to play around with that. Okay, it's perfectly possible, the app is available in the store, and so are the demo sets that you could play with. Okay. We wanted to go further. Not only did we want to bring that and share that on the Power BI sites and bring that to any mobile device. I get distracted by this one, so let me just move that. Okay. We also introduced a feature that we call natural language query. Okay. That's a pretty cool feature. Some people that might have been around into the SQL industry for quite a bit know that we had something on SQL 2000 that was called English Query. Okay, that was quite tough to get things going and be able to formulate a query in native English. Okay, what we actually did with Q&A is we're leveraging the Power Pivot data model, and we're analyzing that model based on the name of the columns, the name of the expressions that you put in there. You're going to have an authoring experience where you can actually enhance the model with your own interpretations of the data. Okay. But what we're doing there is we'll look at the data types. We'll look at the, every definition you do on that data, allowing us to now query data using natural language. Okay. What's going to happen with that natural language processing is that's going to roll up directly into those Power BI sites. So you can build a really cool Power BI experience by just having people asking their queries the way they're used to it. Okay. So let's go back to that restaurant bar that we talked about. So yeah, I showed you the workbook. I can look at my sales and so on. But what if I would just be able to ask questions in native English, right? What if I want to do something that says show sales, okay? Well, I want to show sales, and I get a sales number here. It doesn't say much. Ooh, wow, show sales, okay? What if I want to show sales per month, okay? Look at that. Did you see that? I went from a number straight to a graph, and I didn't have to do anything. How many of you built reports and reporting services? I feel for you, right? Because every time you build a report, someone is going to go and say, oh, yeah, I like this report kind of different. Can you change the way it looks and things like that? Okay. Or I want to query things differently. I actually, when I say sales per month, I also want to have a report that shows my sales per weekday. Which day of the week is the best? Okay, well, sales per weekday. Okay, I can see in my bar that Saturday is a quite popular day. Wednesday seems to be more popular than Sunday. Okay. Maybe I could do something around Father's Day and attract more people in my bar on Sundays, for example. Okay, but of course, what I can do is I can totally filter this data. And what we do with Q&A is we optimize the visualization based on the query that you formulate. Okay, this is going directly into that Power Pivot model, querying that Power Pivot model directly. Okay. So no need for you to build any kind of reports or whatever. You just have that right there. Okay. Show sales per category. Okay. I can do things. I mean, I'm going to have some examples coming up that I can really start playing around with. Okay. Show sales. Vodka versus beer. Okay. So I can see what my sales is. They seem to have a fairly similar amount of sales. Okay. Let me show what I currently have. Show on hand. And their brands. Okay. Show on hand, vodka versus beer. Okay. Show me which vodkas I have. Show me what kind of beers I have in my store, how many I sold. If I want to see things differently and I want to see that more into a cart, whatever, I can actually change that and change my visualization just like that without making any changes to that. Okay? This is going to save your life. Okay? Now, we have a more compelling demo that we did on this. What we drill down into, this is actually a real restaurant bar data that we analyzed, right? Because we wanted to see what the performance was of each of the bartenders and drill down into, hey, how many bartenders are selling what kind of drinks? Is there any way we can improve to have them sell things differently where we make more money at? Okay. Being able for these guys to just query their data and say, like, hey, show me what I have and what I can start promoting now. Okay, that will make sense. There's no such thing that feels so bad as going to a bar or a restaurant and whatever you order on the menu, or whatever drink you order, they come back to you and say, like, I'm sorry, we don't have that anymore. And, well, what do you mean? You guys just opened 10 minutes ago. But anyways, this is definitely one of the capabilities. And of course, those capabilities will roll into those Power BI sites and really bring you that rich visualization, combine that all together. Okay? Let's go back to this one. Okay? So what we talked about, powerful self-service BI capabilities. We got Power Query, which is formerly called Data Store. Actually, if you really want to drill down into this, there's an entire expression library behind it where you can really do some amazing things combining data together. Okay? You can fill in empty columns. You could do what we call a feature that is similar to Excel Flash Fill, where you have like weird data structures that you want to filter out and do aggregations on. You can really do that with that model. Of course, that rolls up into the Power Pivot model, and then I could publish that Power Pivot workbook, share that within my organization, and start leveraging that onto my Power BI site. So the visualization aspect that I showed you with Power Map, this is definitely a demo you should look at. What we did pull in, and I didn't do that for Gold Coast because I wanted to make sure you had a fun week. What we actually pulled in is food inspection data in this demo based in the Seattle area. Like food inspectors that goes out and check, hey, how is my restaurant, how is my bar doing? Well, it's not really nice if people use these plastic gloves on their devices and then they start serving food with that, right? So you probably don't want to have that happening. So all inspections and violations that we have in a demo, and we can then map that out nicely. One of the things that I did is I looked at the Australian publicly available data sets. What's really nice to map out is you look at the population of the census data, and then the census data, you map that out per zip code. Really great visualization that you can do. And you can bring on other things like, what are my wireless access hotspots? There's a rich capability of data sets that you can really start playing with. Okay? We talked about the sites. We talked about the query processing, natural language, which is Q&A. We talked about the visualization that we want to bring on any device. So we have about 5 minutes left, which is exactly where I want it to be. Okay? If you think about hybrid cloud scenarios, there's a lot of enhancements we did with SQL Server 2014 to make the step to a hybrid cloud much, much easier for you. Okay? What you can do is you can use a feature that we call Simplified Cloud Backup. In SQL Server 2012, the latest update, what we actually introduced there is a capability that's called Backup to URL. Okay? With the Backup to URL functionality, you can actually define storage on Windows Azure. And when you sit on Windows Azure, you can then say, I have a backup that I currently have sitting on premises. I want to backup that database to the cloud. Okay? Taking advantage of all the capabilities, the fact that by default we write 3 copies of that data, so if something goes wrong with the disk, we have failover. But if you really want to go even further and your data center goes down, we can also have geo-enabled replication on that backup as well. Okay? Another option is we made the backup capabilities in SQL Server 2014 much better. You can use a feature that we call Smart Backup that will really embed and automate the way you take backups based on database criteria, where you want to backup them to, and how you want to move things to the cloud. I actually have a session on Friday that is specifically going to talk about how to be a successful DBA in the future. You really need to think, and I had to make that step myself, really need to think about the opportunities and the capabilities you have with leveraging cloud. If you look about the enhancements that we made in terms of high availability, in terms of always-on availability groups, not only can I have more replicas now in SQL Server 2014, I can also have a replica that sits in the cloud. Okay? So you could synchronously say, my data that sits on premises, I want to have a replica in the cloud for failover purposes or for offload in terms of reporting. Okay? The key strength of always-on availability groups is that you now have a readable copy that you can use for any kind of purposes. Okay? So really think about those scenarios. What else I can do is, if I switch over to SQL Management Studio here, and switch over to that machine again, okay? What else I can do is I can basically take a database, right-click, go to tasks, and I'm not going to run the full demo on this, but what I can do is I could say, hey, deploy this database to Windows Azure SQL Database. It will grab that entire database, move that over to Windows Azure, okay? Think about that in terms of consolidating some of your test and dev. Even better, and we have those capabilities in SQL Server 2012 as well, but I can deploy a database to a Windows Azure virtual machine, automatically provision that virtual machine as part of that as well. Okay, so a very easy step to moving things over to the cloud. If I were to look at that backup capability, for example, okay, I can do backup to Azure. The way that works is actually fairly simple. Okay, I create a credential that is going to my storage key on Azure, and then I just use a backup database statement. So let me just drop and create this. Okay, so I have my credential. I'm going to backup my database, hit execute, and if everything goes fine there, I just took a backup of my database and moved that over to the cloud. Of course, for demo purposes, I used a very small database, but that's the concept. If I want to restore things, same thing. Restore from URL is going to give you that same functionality. Okay? Whoa. First day. Morning session. I think we covered quite a lot, haven't we? Okay? If you look on the platform, I think if you really combine the capabilities that we have with the data platform, being able to have SQL Server running on Windows, combining that with HD Insight, and we have a session later today that's going to talk about combining data and using unstructured data, running SQL Server in a Windows Server virtual machine or running that on Azure, using one of the data services, combine that with the Power BI capabilities, I think we have a very complete and a consistent data platform that each and every one of you, whether you're BI, IT pro, developer, could continue to build upon, okay? If you want to get your hands on onto the Power BI capabilities that I showed you, register on the Power BI preview. You can actually sign up, you get your own tenant, you can add 25 users to it, and you can start playing with all of those capabilities right away. Same thing, there's offerings on Windows Azure, and I'm going to be really focusing on what makes a good DBA in the future by leveraging some of those cloud capabilities in my session I have on Friday. And of course, download the SQL Server 2014 CTP if you have not done that yet. Now, one of the questions I ask myself is, why would I download that if I already am on Windows Azure? What I can do on Windows Azure is I could just create a new virtual machine, and we actually have a template there. You'll be able to provision SQL 2014 in less than 10 minutes, okay, and have that virtual machine up and running. Personally, I like to have my cloud scenarios as a backup, okay? So I come to this event, and I showed you that demo on Hackathon earlier and go like, hey, what's going on here? If I would have just, my failover would have been, I'm just going to connect to my Azure VM that I have up and running as well and show you the demo there. I think we're right on time. Thank you for that. What I'm going to do is, later this week, everything that I showed you in terms of the demo scripts, the way I configured my databases, provide you with a backup of my sample database, I'm actually going to write a blog about that, so you can find that on my blog, and I will link you to the demo scripts and so on. Okay, so you can play around with that yourself, whether you download the CTP bits or whether you spin that up into a Windows Azure virtual machine, that is totally up to you. With that, I want to say thanks for your time. Thanks for being here. I hope you enjoyed the session. And I really hope you are going to continue to enjoy any of the follow-up sessions that we're going to be having. Thank you.